Page 97. B. Tangaroa.
My grandfather, Thor Heyerdahl, led many expeditions and scientific excavations. He became world famous for the Ra 1 and Ra 2 expeditions over the Atlantic Ocean, for solving the riddle of the giant statues on Easter Island, and for proving the existence of ancient civilizations through a series of successful excavations. His first major expedition was in 1947, when he sailed the Kon-Tiki raft across the Pacific Ocean from Peru to Polynesia. He wanted to prove that the people who had lived in South America in ancient times could have travelled across the Pacific all the way to Polynesia. Very few believed that this was possible. To sail a raft made of balsa wood and bamboo across the Pacific, and many were convinced the expedition would end in catastrophe. My grandfather lived a fantastic life. He was busy travelling all the time, but when he was at home, he was just an ordinary family man. We had an ordinary grandfather-grandson relationship. I saw him maybe two or three times a year during holidays, at Christmas, that kind of thing. People called him an adventurer, but he never did anything simply for the sake of adventure. It was always to prove his theories. As for me, I first trained as a carpenter, but I got bored with that after a while and decided to train as a civil engineer. Then one day I got an email from Torgeir Hegraf. My grandfather had apparently been his childhood hero, and a few years previously, he had got the idea of retracing the Kon-Tiki's route. He wondered what I thought of the idea. His planning was at quite an advanced stage, and he'd got a friend involved who was pretty experienced at expeditions. At this stage, I was just finishing my degree and was a bit fed up of academic work, and the thought of going into a 9-to-5 job wasn't too enticing. I thought the whole project sounded exciting, but clearly there were also some serious considerations with respect to using the Heyerdahl name. I know perfectly well why I had been asked to join the expedition. To be honest, my gut reaction was to say yes anyway. However, I had to discuss it with my family first. My father and I are very close, and he said I should go for it. I did not want just to be a figurehead, however. I wanted to make a real contribution to the project, so it was rather handy that I'm a trained carpenter and a civil engineer. In addition, I'm passionate about diving, so in many ways you could say that this project was tailor-made for me. Having a Heyerdahl on board made it easier to get sponsors, and the Kon-Tiki Museum gave us their full backing in 2004. We had planned to leave in January 2005, but then there was the tsunami in December 2004 and tour's sponsors pulled out. They wanted to channel their resources into reconstruction work in Asia instead, which was quite understandable. So the expedition was postponed for 1 year.
The raft.
We built the raft ourselves after studying how they had lashed the logs together on the Kon-Tiki. We also had a chat with Knut Haugland, a member of the original crew, who told us that they lashed together two logs at a time so that if a couple got torn apart, the whole raft wouldn't fall to pieces. We learned quite a few things from the Kon-Tiki raft itself, such as the function of the sail. We had almost three times as much canvas on our raft, and we could also use our sail for steering. In fact, the greatest difference between the Kon-Tiki and the Tangaroa was the steering mechanism. The Kon-Tiki had a long steering oar at the stern, which they had real trouble with. Some of the time they simply had to give up because they weren't able to keep hold of it. My grandfather later discovered that prehistoric rafts were equipped with a completely different steering mechanism. They had large logs going through the raft that could be raised or lowered. The raft could be turned by altering the keel area, for example raising it a little at the front and lowering it a little at the back. We constructed our raft in the same way. My grandfather would no doubt have done the same with the Kon-Tiki if he had been building it today. In all other respects, the Tangaroa raft was built the same way as the original rafts. There are no nails or chains, and there is no steel wire. There is just bamboo, balsa wood and rope, and the sail is made of cotton. We could have used sails made of modern ultralight material, of course, but then it would not have been an authentic prehistoric raft.
At sea.
We left South America on exactly the same date as my grandfather's expedition, the 28th of April. We had the Kon-Tiki logbook with us. It's full of observations about wind and weather, temperatures, that kind of thing. That's how we were able to compare conditions today with conditions 60 years ago. Just like on the Kon-Tiki, the strongest wind we had was near gale force, although that was enough for the waves to be 5 to 7 meters high. They tower up behind you like a mountain and toss the 20-ton raft up in the air as if it were just a leaf. Then down you plunge into a deep trough, whilst a new mountain wall builds up behind you. But the raft was ruggedly built, and we were never afraid, and we were fortunate to have a very skilled and steady captain. There was a nice atmosphere on board. I'm a night owl, so I never made it to breakfast, but we always ate lunch and dinner together. We celebrated everything we could, my 29th birthday, Undus's birthday, the birthdays of some of the crew members' children, Midsummer Night's Eve, whatever possible, really. Occasions like these mean a lot when you're stuck on a raft on a vast ocean. The food consisted mostly of fish. The Dorado was our best friend and possibly also our worst enemy. I think Dorado was on the menu 35 times. We also had some emergency rations we had been given by the US Marines, as the Kon-Tiki had.
Vast changes.
There were two main aims to the expedition. We wanted to honour my grandfather, and we were interested in comparing past and present conditions. When my grandfather arrived in Peru, there were large areas of jungle and a village numbering about 5,000 inhabitants. But when we arrived there, we could see no jungle at all in the area. There are only plantations now, and the village had grown into a town of 150 to 200,000 inhabitants. During the voyage, we took many water samples, which have been analysed at the universities of Bergen and Zurich. We were right down at sea level and were moving at a mere 2 to 3 knots, so we were able to get good quality samples across the whole Pacific Ocean. The Kon-Tiki expedition encountered a large number of sharks, and as a result, they had to build a type of basket to wash in. I had been looking forward to diving among the sharks, actually, but we only saw 4 sharks during the entire voyage. That's almost certainly a result of overfishing. And another thing, the crew of the Kon-Tiki caught and ate tuna fish quite frequently, whereas we only caught 1 tuna fish during the entire voyage. So we are talking about quite dramatic changes in marine life over the course of 60 years. The time we spent crossing the seemingly endless Pacific Ocean made us realise what an amazing thing it was my grandfather and his crew had done. Setting off on a voyage like that without knowing if it would succeed and without knowing whether the timber would even remain afloat the whole way. He just trusted his theories implicitly, and he was proved right.